Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live, where we connect you with the artists and authors you love, who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. We've all heard the saying that a picture is worth a thousand words, and I'm here to tell you about a book that I believe would not only be able to share a very powerful picture, but also, of course, be able to take you into a part of the history of the United States that is not only powerful, but also poignant, especially in 2014. Matt Herron is the author of the book, Mississippi. Mississippi Eyes, the story and photography of the Southern Documentary Project, and we're going to talk to him not only about this book, but also the summer of 1964, what it was like for him to be a part of this amazing journey of not only being able to showcase change, but also to be able to experience it himself. Matt, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hello, Cyrus. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, look, really excited to be able to speak with you. I think what makes this book so great is it's kind of two stories in one. You're able to not only to showcase what was going on in the South, of course, in 1964, but also your own personal journey through words about how it affected you, your family, and those that you were working with. Matt, why did you decide now was the time to be able to share the story?
Well, you know, the project kind of faded after it was done, and it took me a while to realize its importance and also to collect the photographs because the photographs were scattered as well. But finally, I got it all together, and I thought, you know, it's a little piece of history that will die if I don't tell it.
Yeah.
So I decided to write the book, and here we are.
Yeah, and you know what I think is so great, as I mentioned, you have the photographs which tell a part of the story, and for myself and others that are living in the state of Mississippi or are from here, Matt, you know, it kind of, you know, we can go through and say, oh, you know, I know that place. And I think it allows us to see not only what was, but in some ways, you know, how things, you know, in some places have changed. Other times, you know, you see where there's still change to be made. But I think the thing that really got me as I was reading the book and going through the pictures, especially prepping for the segment with you, is how there were always going to be people that were willing to stand up for what they thought was right. How did you become one of those people, Matt? How did you become a person that was not just complacent, but wanted to be part of not only the movement that was going on in the country, but also, of course, the importance of the message?
Well, somewhere along the line, I got radicalized. It's a little hard for me to put my finger on it. I graduated from a rather conservative college, Princeton, but the people I met and along the way moved me to the left, and I eventually ended up being a conscientious objector in the Korean War. And then in the early 60s, my wife and I were living in Philadelphia, and I was running peace demonstrations for the Quakers, the Philadelphia Society of Friends, and got to the point where I could bring 1,000 well-dressed Quakers out with neatly lettered signs standing around City Hall saying, no more war, no more atomic testing. And a little voice woke me up in the middle of the night and said, you know, you're not doing a darn bit of good here, really. You're just a part of the establishment.
Mm.
If you want to be relevant, you've got to go where kids are getting beaten at lunch counters and where nonviolence is really being tested. So my wife shared these views, and we decided that we had to move south and join the civil rights movement. I was beginning my career as a photojournalist, and I thought I could suggest stories to northern editors from Mississippi and get assignments, but could also lend my hand to the civil rights movement.
Right.
So we moved to Jackson in the summer of 63. Janine went first to make sure it'd be safe to bring our kids into the state. They were 3 and 5 at the time. And she was told if we lived in a white neighborhood in Jackson, we'd be okay, but that we shouldn't try to do it anywhere else in Mississippi, which proved to be quite true.
Right.
At any rate, we were the only family, I think, with children to move south and join the civil rights movement. So that's kind of how I got there.
Do you think, especially, I mean, we're talking about 1964, but when it comes to the Southern Documentary Project, Matt, do you think that the reason why it was able to be successful, and at least chronicling what was happening, the sights and sounds, as it were, through photos, is because, you know, people were ready. They were ready for not only, you know, a shift, but they were ready also to be able to show people what was happening.
Well, I think it was a magic time, although, frankly, none of us knew it. Then we were not there because we thought civil rights was going to be successful. We were there because we thought we had to be. But there was a kind of a magical coming together in Mississippi and other places of the South of young, mostly black, college-educated kids coming south and getting embedded with local leaders who had been struggling for decades to make some progress toward individual freedom in Mississippi. But that combination of young guys, mostly guys, with a new perspective and people who'd been in the communities for their whole lifetime really generated something magical. And I don't think... I haven't seen it happen in this country before.
Mm-hmm.
It was a special time.
Yeah. You know, I think not only was it a special time, but again, it's so interesting. This conversation with you was set up way before the events that have been kind of plastered all over the news recently that's taken place in Missouri, Matt. You know, when you see that, though, when you see the power of pictures today, I mean, how does that make you feel as a, you know, as a journalist, as a photographer? How does it make you feel to see not only what's going on today, but also the way that these pictures are capturing it?
Well... Pictures have a different function than words. Pictures, if they're good, particularly news pictures, they give you an immediate bam, almost a hit in the pit of the stomach, and we can see the news footage coming in from Ferguson, kind of detailing all that. Charlie Moore's photographs of the police dogs and the fire hoses in Birmingham were passed around in Congress in 1964 and had a real effect in bringing about the Voting Rights, or not the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So I always knew that I was photographing history, and I knew that my role was to be a witness to what was going on, not to be a hero, but to get the pictures in any way I could and get them to the airport that evening and put them on a plane so they could go out and people could see what was happening. Because I think the country was largely unaware of what black life was like in the Deep South in that period. Certainly people in the North were. So our job was to make that relevant,
right,
make that evident to people.
You know, and I think that's what you've been able to capture in this book. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking with Matt Herod. He is the individual who's brought to life the book, Mississippi Eyes. It chronicles an amazing journey, the story and photography of the Southern Documentary Project. And in the book, we're able to see not only the work of these various photographers that came together during this time, but also, of course, the words of Matt that he was going throughout his life. There's something that you had wrote, Matt, and I actually want to share this and have you talk about it. Because I think part of what happens today, even in 2014, is that we are sometimes paralyzed by the fear of what could be, of what, you know, what might be, of what is. And this is what you wrote on page 74 of the book. So I'm supposed to be worried, alert, scared, driving down this remote Mississippi country road after dark. I try to, but fear no longer rises to the pit of my stomach as headlights creep up behind me. I'm completely relaxed. man, this is my land, just as much as it is anyone's. You know, I think those words are things that a lot of people would like to feel. Not everyone feels that comfort, even today, Matt, unfortunately. How did you get to a place where fear was not going to stop you?
Well, fear was pervasive. There was a good reason why all of us were afraid. And mostly I kind of armored myself. I know when I got into a situation, I would strap my cameras on almost like armor plate. And when I did, I was a different person. And I could do things that were too scary for me to do in my normal state. And because I had a role. The word you quote is actually by George Bellis, one of our photographers, and I don't know whether I was ever that relaxed, but I do know that Mississippi got under our skin in a way that we absolutely never thought it would. And we came to both fear the state and love it. You know, I think we love the people, we love the landscape, and in some ways we always felt that if Mississippi could begin to solve its problems, and I think I see signs of that happening today, it might be an ideal place for a black family to raise its children.
Yeah.
And we even see a reverse migration going on today as folks leave some of the black ghettos in the north and return to the roots in the deep south. It's a very interesting change.
You know, I have to say, and I've mentioned it on this program in the past, Matt, I have, you know, as someone, I've lived in Mississippi most of my life. I've lived in other places, but came back here. And I, you know, I guess, and I share with people, I guess I was born here at just the right time and have lived here in just the right time. I was born in 1975 in Jackson, Mississippi, lived outside of Jackson in Rankin County. And, you know, I've heard stories of what people have gone through. Have not personally experienced them myself, never been pulled over or felt as though I was being harassed by a police officer or, you know, never felt as though I was being treated a certain way because of the color of my skin. And I think, you know, I believe that my life and my brother's life and other family members' lives are an example of not only what's possible, but also that there is a shift. Is it also your hope, too, and I think you just referenced that in your comments, is it also what you think that, you know, it's not always what it's portrayed to be, that pictures from the 1960s are not necessarily the Mississippi of 2014?
No, I think there have been vast changes in the state. And I've been back to a couple of reunions, and I was back a month ago for the 50th celebration of Freedom Summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mississippi has the largest percentage of elected black officials of any state in the union, and that's kind of astonishing. While I was back at the conference in Tougaloo, I learned that by 2024, all of the deep south states will have a majority of people of color. I found that just absolutely astonishing. And I think that is, you know, bodes well for the future. The other thing that gives me hope is not the political shenanigans that go on in the state houses and in Washington, but what happens in high schools. Yeah. I see kids accepting differences of race, color, gender, sexual orientation, that I barely thought was possible. And I think as these kids grow up and begin to move into positions of power and influence, that we're going to see great changes in the country. So I'm basically hopeful.
Right.
But George Bellis, who's one of the photographers in the book who died recently, said something to me I thought was quite wise. He said, the struggle for human liberation is not a goal or an end. It's a pathway. And you never quite get to that goal that you hope for, but walking that path and doing the stuff you have to do is what life is all about. And it's I think looking at it that way is one way that gives me hope.
Yeah. You said at the beginning of this conversation, Matt, that you did not know at the time what you were a part of. Do you think that is also a great thing for us also to realize, to make sure that we are as active as possible, however we can be, because we never know how the actions we're making today will affect the world tomorrow?
Absolutely. You know, the evolution of social movements is mysterious and very hard to predict. I think when I first came to Mississippi, there were about 35 of us involved in civil rights in the state. Think of how small that group is. But most of the great social movements in this country and actually in the world start with a few people.
Right.
And but they start with an important cause and people who are willing to sacrifice for that cause. If you look at the what happened in Egypt or what happened in Libya or Tunisia, those were all started by a very small group of people, but they responded to something that everybody felt, and people joined in. I think we've got a long way to go in this country, but, you know, and the events in Ferguson, if anything, have proven that to us. But I think we'll get there, and I think that there will be other movements like the civil rights movement that will come along strangely, unpredictably, and unexpectedly to move this country forward.
Right.
I have to believe that. I couldn't go on if I didn't.
Yeah. I think that's true. And I myself am hopeful. I do have this question to ask you, Matt, and I struggle with this a little bit, I have to say. We have not talked a lot on this program about the events that are taking place in Ferguson, Missouri, because I think, you know, I'm one of these people who believe that, you know, let the process, you know, work its way through and then let the facts come out and then, you know, you'll know the full story. One of the things that has bothered me, and I'm curious as someone who has chronicled history through photographs, what your thoughts are about this. I have seen the pictures from the 1960s of the police officer with dogs being parallel with what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014. I've seen it both on social media as well as through quote-unquote responsible networks like CNN have done it as well. Do you think that is fair? Do you think that is a fair comparison?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, racism is still alive in this country. And, it's shocking. I'm heartened by the way the country has responded to it. I think it's going to be harder for police departments now to put on their armor plate and their tanks and go out like an invading army into some of these communities. But we've got work to do. One of the interesting things to me about Ferguson is that only about 5% of the black citizens of Ferguson were registered to vote. And I think it was I suspect it was a community that was kind of beaten down by apathy. And one of the interesting things to me is that they're now putting up voter registration tables in the street, and people are starting to register to vote.
Right.
And that's where the long-term change is going to come to communities like that.
Well, you know, I think that's true. You know, it's funny that you should mention that, because one of the things I noticed, and I have always said, you know, if you're not part of the process, you are part of the problem. And I think that's one of the things I was very surprised at when I first was hearing about Ferguson, was that there did seem to be this attitude, well, you know, we don't have time, we're working. I had heard someone say on the news, well, we don't have time to, you know, to run for office. We're working, trying to take care of our families. And that's exactly the type of apathy that feeds into then being able to have, you know, people who you feel as though don't represent you being elected. And I think it's great to be able to see that, but I think it does show that, as Mississippi Eyes shows, I believe, that, you know, if you want to be able to see things move forward, you have to be a part of that progress, and you have to be part of the wave. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Matt Herron, again, everyone, has been our guest. Mississippi Eyes is the book. The story and photography of the Southern Documentary Project is the title of the book. It's available on Amazon.com, of course, your favorite bookstore. If they don't have it, they can always order it for you. Matt, is the best place for people to find you at www.takestockphotos.com?
Well, I've got a new website devoted
okay.
to the book. It's called Matt Herron Writer, com, and we're still tweaking it, but we expect to be able in about 3 or 4 days to sell books out of that site. But people can go there and read reviews and see pictures from the book and make up their minds about it. Also, I know that several bookstores in Jackson have large supplies of the books. So it's available, and I hope everybody rushes out and buys it.
Yeah. Well, it is really, I think, a great conversation piece, Matt, and I think it's also part of not only Mississippi's history but the world's history, and I think that makes in itself a keeper for people. Thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cyrus. It's been fun, and I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Enjoyed speaking with you as well. Again, everyone, that website that Matt mentioned was mattheronwriter.com, and we'll post that on our online site as well for you guys to be able to find. I've already posted my review on Amazon.com. Encourage anyone else who's read the book to make sure you guys do the same thing. If you came in late and missed part of the broadcast, thanks to our friends at blogtalkradio.com, you guys can catch the podcast here about 5 minutes after we go off the air. All you have to do is go to our radio website at conversationsliveradio.com. That's conversations with an S, liveradio.com. Also, if you're friends with us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, the link's already available on both of those places. You can head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb or twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free and even share it with your friends using the social media buttons you'll find there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure to take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.